Nacogdoches had grown in recent years since Mexican independence had encouraged many of the refugees from Spanish oppression to come back, and since American colonization had turned the Piney Woods town into a resting place and supply point for overland travelers bound toward Austin's colony and others. It was still dominated by an old stone building which had variously been courthouse and military headquarters in Spanish times. But a great many new buildings had gone up, mostly of logs, because timber was plentiful and required little hauling. Horses and cattle grazed around the outskirts. Andrew's eye was caught by the numerous wagons, and he wondered if all the newcomers were so rich. As he rode up the street, it was apparent there was some unusual excitement in the town. Men gathered in small huddles, talking earnestly. Several staggered, obviously drunk. A large man in a long black coat clutched a Bible.
Awaken, brothers! This is no time to indulge ourselves in drink and debauchery! It is time to counsel with the Lord, to beg Him for His guidance!
If anyone besides Andrew heard him, no one gave any sign. The man turned, and Andrew could see the black patch over one eye. The other eye lighted with recognition.
Welcome, my young friend. You seem sadly out of place here among the Philistines.
Howdy, Fairweather. How's the collections coming?
Oh, I subsist. That is all I ask for. That is about all this land provides anyone.
Looks like a lot of excitement in town.
The devil has found many idle hands here for his workshop. Were I you, I would not tarry any longer than it takes to water your horse. Seeds of violence are being sown here today. The harvest will be briars and thorns.
What seeds are they planting?
Seeds of sedition, of rebellion. They are declaring themselves independent of all law except their own. I'm about to depart this wicked place before God and the Mexican government hurl down a thunderbolt and destroy it. I would strongly advise that you leave with me.
I can't, not yet. I got a job of work to do.
Then you watch yourself. You could find more trouble here than you found in that Waco village.
Fairweather turned and walked toward the stone building, his large Bible tucked under the arm of his black coat. Andrew saw a dozen or so men clustered around a flagpole at the front of the old structure. He watched two of them raise an unfamiliar flag of red and white. It was not Mexican, not Spanish, and not American. He rode the brown horse up closer to try and make out the words on the flag.
Independence, liberty, and justice.
The flag reached the top of the pole. Some waved their hats, and a couple raised rifles into the air. Fairweather raised the Bible above his head again.
Awaken, brothers! This is no time for vain indulgence and the devil's work! It is time to counsel with the Lord! Beg Him for guidance and mercy!
No one was paying any attention to the preacher. Two buckskin-clad men came up and stood beside Andrew's brown horse, watching with much interest the commotion around the flagpole. One held a long rifle, the other a jug. The man with the jug smiled at Andrew.
Never seen it to fail. Try to celebrate a happy occasion, and a preacher will show up and sour the whiskey.
What's the happy occasion?
The man with the rifle looked up, his face furrowing. It was a young face, stubbled with whiskers. His gray eyes held a challenge. Andrew thought perhaps he had seen the man before. He immediately took him for one of those who turn mean when they get drunk. The red veins in his eyes made it appear like he was drunk a lot.
You don't know? Where you been anyway? The moon?
Seems that far. Where I've been, you don't hear much. What's that flag?
Why, my friend, that's the flag of the Republic of Fredonia. This community has just declared its independence from Mexico and the United States and the whole damn world.
That don't sound legal.
Anything's legal if you can make it stick.
The man patted the rifle's long barrel.
We're the boys that can make it stick.
There's Mexican troops stationed here. What are they gonna say about it?
Ain't enough of them to say anything. If they was to try, we'd hoe them down like weeds in the field. We'll be sending them packing pretty soon back to Bar. And hell, we may decide to go down there and take Bar, too.
The whiskey was loud. The other man unstoppered the jug and raised it for a long drink. He passed it to the rifleman.
Here you go, Jace Beard. Better oil up your goozle some more before you start marching off to Bar. It's a fur piece.
Beard. Andrew had heard the people at the Moreno place speak the name. He thought he had heard it somewhere before as well. He studied the face, and he remembered. This was the young ruffian who'd angrily bumped into him one day in front of Stephen Austin's office in San Felipe. An older man had been with him, his father. What had been his name? Tolliver. That was it, Tolliver Beard. Jace's Adam's apple bobbed up and down as he held the jug high. He wiped the back of his hand across his mouth and lifted the jug toward Andrew.
Better have a snort, Moon Man. The celebration is a-fixin' to commence.
If I was you, I'd wait and see what the Mexicans say before I celebrated too much. And I expect Stephen Austin will have some notions on it, too.
Stephen Austin has got nothing to say about it. Hayden Edwards tried to get him to help us, and he wouldn't raise his hand.
Yeah, he may raise it now.
The man with the rifle began to frown deeply. Suspicion crept into eyes glazing from the whiskey.
I thought you just now rode into town. How come you to know so much about what Austin's going to think?
I can guess.
The other man's face had clouded. He pushed in close beside Andrew's left stirrup.
Where did you come from, stranger? Louisiana?
Andrew considered lying to them, but decided against it. When he had to lie to such as these, it would be time for him to slink off into a hole.
I just came up from San Felipe.
Then you're a spy! A damn stinking spy!
Jace turned to the men at the flagpole.
Come around it, boys! We got ourselves a spy!
Andrew tried to pull the brown away, but the man with the jug grabbed the reins and held them. Andrew saw three or four men come running from the direction of the stone building. He tried to bring up his rifle, but someone grabbed its barrel. Rough hands gripped him and began trying to pull him down from the saddle. He struggled to hold on, to spur the brown and break free. He felt himself being dragged off the horse's left side. He clutched at the pommel but couldn't hold it against all that angry strength. Andrew felt himself being dragged between two log buildings.
Gentlemen, now, gentlemen! I implore you not to resort to violence. Oh, it is an abomination in the sight of the Lord.
No one paid the preacher any attention.
What are we going to do with him, Jace?
Take him to Ben Edwards and see if he wants to hang him. We're fixing to stomp on him a little first.
Jace had uncommon strength as he hauled Andrew to his feet. His breath was foul. He pushed Andrew up against a log wall and drove a huge fist into his stomach. Andrew bent and felt a fist strike his face. Andrew tasted blood, warm and sticky and tinged with salt. He sensed more than saw the men gathered around him, two or three joining Jace and his friend at the beating. Gradually, he seemed to go numb, hardly feeling the blows to his ribs, his stomach, his face. He sensed that he was sinking to the ground, that he was looking at the men's boots from close up.
You sons of bitches, get away from that boy!
Andrew saw a tall, angular shape pushing between the men semicircled around him. He saw the quick movement of a long-barreled rifle and heard it swung with a mighty force. A man sprawled on the ground beside Andrew. Through a red haze, he recognized the bloody face of the man called Jace. His eyes were rolled back.
Now the rest of you all better step back, because I'm just on the point of losing my temper.
Andrew sensed that his antagonists were backing away.
You there, drag that son of a bitch away before I take a notion to hit him again. And any of you want a taste of what's in this barrel, you just make a false move toward me or that boy.
Apparently, their curiosity was limited, for nobody made any such move. Someone grabbed Jace's feet and unceremoniously dragged him off through horse droppings that happened to be in the way.
You, preacher, you fetch that brown horse over here, and you too. You lift that boy up onto him. Careful now, you hear me? I'm fixing to get mad in a minute. When I get mad, I even scare myself.
Huh? Andrew felt strong hands raise him up from the ground, then lift him into the saddle. He tried to find the stirrups. Fairweather guided first one boot into place, then the other.
All right, now, back away from him, all of you.
Andrew blinked. He could see the men, though they seemed to sway backward and forward. It was like looking at them through a fog. He got a grip on the pommel of the saddle, for this would be a poor time to fall to the ground. The preacher took the reins at the bit and led the brown horse out into the dirt street. Andrew dimly saw the tall man climb stiffly upon a horse of his own, then turn back and take the brown horse's reins. Andrew blinked his eyes clear. There in front of him, gaunt as an old wolf but defiant as an old badger, sat Eli Pleasant, 10 years older than Methuselah and still as tough as the first time he'd ever shaved.
Thanks, Fairweather, for coming and fetching me. I declare, seems to me like I am everlastingly having to come and drag you Lewis boys away from trouble. Between you and Michael, you probably wore 10 years off my life.
Andrew felt his throbbing eyes swelling shut. After a while, he could see through little more than a slit in his left and less in his right. He clung painfully to the saddle, knowing that if he loosened his hold, he would fall like a sack of corn. Old Eli rode in front, setting an easy, plodding pace, leading Andrew's brown horse. Andrew was apprehensive over possible pursuit, but Eli showed not a whit of concern. He had probably thrown a healthy scare into that bunch with the crazy old man look in his eyes and his voice carrying some of the threat of hellfire that the preacher Fairweather might have envied. If any of the crowd were personally acquainted with him, they had probably counseled the others that Eli Pleasant was a good man to leave alone. He was a quiet old codger when things went his way, but he could be aroused to fight like a sore-footed bear. He had survived long years in the outlaw country of western Louisiana, making his living smuggling goods in both directions across the border at considerable risk to life and liberty. He was not one to be intimidated by anything or anybody small.
We're fixing to come to a little stream just yonder a piece. You'll feel better when you get all that blood washed off your face. Come on now, let's get you down.
The water was freezing cold. Its first rude shock set Andrew to trembling, but it eased the fever in his battered face, at least temporarily. He could see a bit better, too. Eli fetched a bottle.
Here you go, son. Go ahead and take a long drink.
The amber liquid warmed him all the way down, though Andrew knew its warmth was but temporary. When it passed, he would probably be colder than ever. Eli eyed him critically.
You ain't pretty. I wonder what you done to get them boys back yonder so riled up.
They thought I came here to spy for Austin.
Did you?
I wasn't looking at it quite that way.
Well, if you was in their boots, how would you look at it?
Like they did, I reckon. Oh, that don't make me hurt any less.
Always try to look at a thing through the other man's eyes. At least you'll have a better idea what to expect from him. Now, come on, we best get going if we don't want to ride all night.
Where are you taking me?
To some friends of mine. Same place I carried your brother Michael the time he was wounded and your dad killed. They're pretty good at taking care of hurt folks. They've had a plenty of practice with their own.
As the sun went down, the evening turned cold. Andrew hunched painfully in the saddle. In the darkness, with his vision impaired by the swelling, he had no idea what direction they traveled.
Them boys in Nacogdoches ain't ready to start listening to reason. They're having too much fun. But they'll wake up some morning with their heads hurting and their stomachs all soured, and they'll know it ain't no easy thing to run your own country. I'd say to hell with them, except they're liable to get Mexico riled up and spoil Texas for all of us. I'll bet there ain't 150, maybe 200 Fredonians if you was to put them all in one wad. The Mexicans just need to sit back a little while, then come marching in some morning when the boys are sick of one another. Like as not, there won't even be no fight to it.
Andrew feared Eli was not taking his own advice, that he was not seeing the incident through the Mexican's eyes.
Yeah, I gotta get the word back to Austin.
Shape you're in, you'd be the New Year's getting there. The news will reach Austin in due time.
Well, but I promised him I'd get up there and...
Andrew realized that he was making no headway with Eli. The old man was selectively deaf. He heard only what he wanted to hear. Andrew felt his body slowly going stiff, the soreness settling all the way to the bone. He gritted his teeth and resisted complaint until finally he lost his grip on the pommel and felt himself sliding forward over the horse's shoulder. He tried in vain to make his numbed fingers grasp the brown mane. Eli dismounted and knelt.
World's come to a hell of a pass when a Lewis can't even stay on a horse. Bust anything?
Feels like everything's busted.
You got to give them boys credit. They don't settle for halfways. We'd just as well make a dry camp. Looks to me like you're used up. Next time you go to talk politics, you'll first take the measure of them you're talking to.
Andrew offered no argument. Eli staked the two horses while Andrew struck flint and steel, trying to spark a fire in a wad of dry grass. He hurt too much, and Eli had to complete the job. Andrew rolled up in his blanket and tried to get warm as the blaze slowly built in a small pile of dead wood.
Sorry, I ain't got nothing to fix for supper.
That was the least of Andrew's concerns. His jaw was too sore for chewing, and his stomach was too riled to accept food if he could have forced it down.
I wasn't worried about your supper, I was thinking about mine. I ain't ate since breakfast.
Andrew huddled close to the fire, trying to absorb all of its warmth.
Oh, that one that started it all? I heard somebody call him Beard.
And that was Jace Beard. He's got a mean streak in him, but damn little sense to go with him. The Tolliver Beard, his old daddy, he's the one you really got to watch. He's just as mean, but a right smart faster in the head. It's his notion that he can take over a fat lot of land under Hayden Edwards' new rules. And he's got the determination to do it if somebody don't put a stop to the Fredonians. I know that old bastard from Louisiana. He's like a dog that once he gets a hold of a bone, he don't turn it loose.
The cold and the constant hurting kept Andrew from going to sleep for a long time. He hoped the two men Eli had struck with his rifle barrel were feeling a similar misery. When he finally managed to nod off, his dreams carried him to Marie's kitchen, warm and snug and smelling of a hot supper cooking on the hearth. He played with little Mordecai and watched Marie rock the baby in a cradle Michael had built. Once, his dream altered a little. Instead of Marie, he saw the girl Petra. Then it was Marie again, or perhaps not. He found he couldn't tell them apart. Andrew awakened to see a cold winter sun rising in the east, all light and no heat. Half frozen, he shivered and tried to sit up. Through a blur, he watched Eli saddling the horses. Eli studied him critically.
Your face is speckled with blue welts, and them eyes appear to be swollen nigh shut. You feel any better than you look?
Damn little.
Andrew struggled slowly to his feet, swaying. Eli led the brown horse up to him, and Andrew steadied himself by leaning against the saddle. Eli gave him a careful boost up.
I've seen beef hanging on a hook that looked better than you. Wouldn't surprise me none if you got a rib or two broke. But we still need to ride a ways if you can make it.
I can make it.
He soon reconsidered that declaration of confidence, though he was determined not to retract it. Every step the brown horse made was like the blow of a Fredonian's fist. Andrew broke a twig from a tree and stuck it between his teeth, clamping down on it when he felt like making a cry. He didn't want Eli to see the extent of the pain. It had been part of Mordecai Lewis's teaching to his sons that a man never complained. He took whatever was his lot and he made the best of it. Andrew began recognizing landmarks. He sensed Eli's destination long before they reached it. His swollen eyes made out the shape of the log cabin, the nearby sheds, the wagons and tents and jacales close around.
I've been here. Some of these folks thought I was a spy for the Edwards brothers.
I never thought about it before, but all you Lewis boys have got an honest face. That's more than enough to make folks suspicious in a country like this.
Word of their coming preceded them. People emerged from the tents and sheds to watch their approach. Andrew saw the three Blackwoods standing beside their wagon. Finnis had his one arm around the waist of the plump girl, Nellie.
Oh, my God.
Her reaction at the sight of Andrew's face told him how bad he looked.
Did you do that to him all by yourself, old man? I'd have been glad to come and help you.
Eli ignored Finnis, and Andrew tried to. That was difficult, hearing the pleasure in Finnis's voice at Andrew's misfortune.
I swear, Andrew, this is the first time I ever thought you looked good.
Andrew had no strength to respond, but he mentally set Finnis's remark on the back shelf in his memory to be called up for review at some appropriate time in the future. He sensed someone following him and turned his head. Isaac Blackwood trailed him afoot. Isaac's two older brothers stayed behind. Several people had come out to the tiny porch of Senora Moreno's cabin. The girl Petra hurried forward, lifting her skirt so she could run.
What has happened to him?
Eli answered her in Spanish.
Might say he had a small disagreement in town over a matter of politics, and he failed to persuade them to his line of thinking.
Carlos! Come quickly and help me get him down!
Andrew swayed drunkenly and bumped hard against the brown horse. The animal shied away from him, almost making him fall, despite the efforts of the Morenos. Isaac Blackwood lent them a hand. Andrew wanted to tell him to go back to his brothers Finnis and Luke, but at the moment, it was expedient to accept help from any quarter. At least Isaac wasn't laughing at him.
Must have been some of the Edwards people.
It was.
Some of the same ones that burnt us out, I expect. Same ones that have got all these folks forded up here. What are we gonna do about it?
Andrew tried talking to him. See how much good that done.
I was thinking about something stronger than talk.
Andrew took a quick, though blurry, look at the people gathering around, eager to know what was happening.
Yeah, there's way too many for this little bunch to whip.
I know we can't do that. Not without some extra help. I was just wondering how we might go about getting that help.
Austin.
What about Austin?
Austin's got to know what's happened. Yeah, I got to go and tell him.
I didn't think I'd even get you this far. It'll be some days before you go anywheres.
Andrew grudgingly admitted to himself that Eli was right.
And you go and tell him.
Not me, boy. Austin never did approve of my business activities. Was I to go down into his bailiwick, he just might take it in his head to turn me over to the Mexican authorities and bar. It'd tickle them to have me for their permanent guest.
Are you men going to keep him standing out here all day? Bring him into the house.
Austin's got no quarrel with me. I'll go. What do you want me to tell him, Andrew?
Andrew stalled. Surely there must be somebody here more responsible than a Blackwood to carry the message. Simon Wells, perhaps. But Isaac allowed him little chance to argue. He took Andrew's right arm and Carlos took the left. Together, they half carried Andrew into the log cabin.
This ain't no time for holding old grudges. Me and my brothers, we got an interest in this thing too. Even bigger than yours. Because there ain't nobody burned you out yet. Now, what is it Austin needs to know?
As they eased him onto a rough wood frame bed with rawhide stretched beneath a corn shuck mattress, Andrew reluctantly told what he had heard about the declaration of a Fredonian Republic.
If Austin can get word to the Mexican authorities about it before they learn it from their own people, maybe it'll help keep them from seeing us all as rebels.
I don't much give a damn what the authorities think. They're a greasy-looking lot to me. But I'd admire to see them land thieves and Nacogdoches get their due for what they done to us. So I'll carry your message to Austin.
Isaac turned toward the door, but stopped.
I never thought me and any of you Lewises would ever take the same side in a fight. It'd spoil Finnis' supper for a week if he was to know I'd done you a favor, Andrew. So if he asks, you tell him you tried to stop me, but couldn't.
Andrew would have stopped Isaac if he had known how. He tried to raise a protest with Eli, but Eli had already gone back out the door and was talking earnestly to Isaac, telling him what he knew of events in Nacogdoches. The last thing Andrew saw was Petra's sympathetic eyes as she laid a damp cloth over his face.
Lie still now.
When at last he came fully awake, he knew by the faded light that the weak winter sun was almost gone. He opened his eyes as much as he could. The blurred images confused him at first. He thought he saw Marie sitting in a handmade wooden chair. Well, that made no sense. There was no reason for her to be here.
Marie?
Who?
Sorry, I...
Andrew had to think for a moment before switching to Spanish.
I woke up and I thought you were somebody else.
You slept a long time. Do you feel better now?
Andrew wasn't sure. He tried to raise up, but he felt as if he were bound by rawhide. Every muscle in his body seemed paralyzed. He lay back, defeated. She touched his face with her small, warm hand. He remembered old times at home in Tennessee when he had been ill or hurt, and his mother's hands felt as if they had a healing power. Petra's touch was like that, soothing, strengthening.
Your face is still fevered. Now that you are awake, I will bring another wet cloth that will draw out some of the pain and the heat.
He could have told her that her hand had had the same effect.
Thank you.
Andrew felt with his right hand and confirmed what he already knew, that his face was swollen and cut and sore in a dozen places. He felt his nose, wondering if it might be broken. It hurt enough. Those damned Fredonian patriots might have killed him if Eli Pleasant hadn't shown up. He doubled his fist in remembered anger, but quickly relaxed it when a sharp pain jabbed his knuckles. Petra brought the wet cloth and carefully laid it across his face. Her hand rested a moment on his cheek before she drew it away. He felt a cold draft as the door opened.
Girl told me you finally come awake. For a while I was afraid we might have to organize a burying party.
You may yet. Oh, there's a whole army of little demons hammering away inside of me.
No, takes a heap of killing to put Lewis under the ground. Remember, I've seen some mean ones try.
Oh, they might have done it this time if you hadn't been there. I owe you, Eli.
I'll mark it down in my ledger. Someday when I'm an old man, I may want to come and live with you.
Someday. Oh, you're already old enough to have raised George Washington. You can come and live with me now. I'd be obliged for your company.
You don't need an old man sharing your cabin. What you need is a young woman. Have you taken a good look at that girl, Petra?
My eyes have been pretty swollen to where I can't hardly see.
When they get unswelled, you open them good and wide. Was I a couple years younger, I'd be interested in her myself.
Everybody keeps trying to get me harnessed up. I don't remember hearing when you ever got married.
I never stood in front of no preacher, but a man is meant to share his blessings. How do you think I learned to talk Spanish so good? And French, too. Your Spanish could stand some improvement, boy. While you're laid up healing, you ought to work on it. I got a feeling that girl will be a willing teacher.
Yeah, I'll be up and leaving here as soon as I can.
What for? Austin will be bringing help, more than likely. You just as well stay here and wait for him. Besides, if that bunch of Nacogdoches decide to do mischief out this way, these folks will need all hands. They could use a Lewis's help.
I hadn't thought of it like that. You'll be here too, won't you?
Yeah, I'm fixing to go back to Nacogdoches. Taking care of you made me run off and leave some unfinished business.
Yeah, that bunch will jump me. They'll know you. No telling what they might do.
Ain't no swamp rats got the guts to bother old Eli. Old Tolliver Beard has known me from way back. He knows I got some rowdy friends that stove their heads in. Besides, in Nacogdoches, I can see what's going on. Out here, all I can do is guess.
Andrew was still trying to argue with him when he heard the old man's feet shuffling across the floor. Eli had never been given to lengthy arguments. He just went ahead and did what he wanted and let the devil take the hindmost. He acted as if he had Lewis blood in him.
Are you cold?
Petra's hands pulled the blanket up tighter around him, and they stayed longer than was necessary, touching his shoulders. This time, he remembered his Spanish.
I'm all right. Did you hear what Eli said?
He spoke in English. I do not understand English.
He said my Spanish is not very good.
It could be better.
I could improve it, but I need someone to talk with.
When you first awakened, you called me by someone else's name.
When I saw you, I thought you looked like her. That was all.
Ah. Then, Andrew Lewis, I think I would like talking with you to improve your Spanish.
Petra did not get the chance. Not for a little while.
Andrew Lewis, what did you go and talk my little brother into doing?
Andrew could not see Finnis. The damp cloth still covered his eyes.
I didn't talk him into anything.
Well, he rode off for the South and said he was carrying a message to Austin. Your message. What right do you got to be sending a Blackwood off to do your errands?
Fact is, I told him I didn't want him to go. I wanted somebody else.
You mean he went against your wishes?
He did. I'd rather if anybody else go besides a Blackwood.
Well, now, that puts a whole different complexion on it. You don't trust a Blackwood to do anything right, is that what you're saying?
That's about it.
And damn you, you're fixing to see something. He'll deliver that message to Austin and do it better than you could have. He'll show you high and mighty, Lewises.
I do not wish to speak against your friends, but that one I do not like.
Andrew smiled, though the effort was painful. It pleased him to know she was a good judge of character. Petra brought Andrew some of the family's meager supper from the cooking place on the hearth in the next room. Though he tried, he managed to put down only a little of it.
How can you live if you do not eat?
Maybe tomorrow.
Petra set the spoon in the plate and the plate in her lap.
It seems strange. I remember when the old man Pleasant brought another Lewis here a long time ago, just as he has done for you. Your brother had been shot by the federal soldiers. I was only a girl then, and had much fear because I had seen their officer murder my father. But my mother and brother said we should take care of Miguel Lewis, because we were all on the same side. We won that fight. Now you are here, and we are on the same side in another.
He'll win this one too.
With your help. That is why you must get well.
Sometime later, Petra's brother, Ramon, younger than Carlos, came into the tiny room and undressed, folding back a blanket on the other small bed.
I've taken someone's place here.
Felipe, you are in Felipe's bed.
Felipe was a third brother, the youngest.
Where will Felipe sleep?
Out there.
Ramon jerked his head toward the door.
Under a shed.
He will be cold. I am not so badly hurt that I should force Felipe to sleep outside.
It will be cold in here, too, once the fire dies out. Do not concern yourself. Felipe and his friends will tell wicked stories half the night. He will not notice the cold.
I do not like being a burden.
We did not consider your brother a burden. His enemies were our enemies. The men who hurt you would do the same to us if they could.
Despite the reassurance, Andrew lay awake a long while after Ramon had fallen asleep. As the cabin's chill closed in and he pulled the blanket tightly around him, conscience made him think of Felipe lying out yonder under a shed, a raw winter wind cutting him to the bone. That was above and beyond hospitality. Next morning, sore and aching, Andrew arose when Ramon did. With some difficulty, he managed to get into his clothes, waving off the young Mexican when he tried to help. Gingerly, he felt his face, knowing it was still puffed and discolored.
How do I look?
You do not want me to tell you.
Andrew nodded. That was answer enough. Ramon broke into a knowing smile.
If I were you, I would lie in bed and let my sister wait on you. It is not a privilege she often gives to anyone, certainly not to Felipe or me.
I am not an invalid.
One should accept blessings whenever they come. We do not receive many in this world.
Petra, her short, stocky mother, and a sister younger than Ramon were in the cramped area which served as kitchen, eating place, and sitting room for the Moreno family. Petra's dark eyes widened with misgiving when Andrew stepped into the small room.
You should not be up.
I am all right.
You should look at yourself. No, you should not. The shock would be bad for you.
It is better that I am up and moving. People die in bed.
Ramon, talk to him.
I cannot hold a rifle on him.
Senora Moreno smiled knowingly.
He is a grown man. Do we learn that grown men do not listen well? especially to good advice.
Ramon grinned at Andrew.
I told you Petra enjoys being nurse to you. You should not be so eager to give that up.
Ramon!
Younger brother Felipe walked in from outside, blanket wrapped around his shoulders.
Look at Felipe. Next you will have to be nurse for him. I have been a burden long enough.
But you are not Andrew Lewis. We are glad to have you here.
Andrew thought Felipe looked less than enthusiastic. His face was a chilled blue.
I will not take Felipe's bed another night. I will find a place for myself.
Petra glanced at her mother for support.
There is no need. We can make room here somewhere. Perhaps in the kitchen? It is often served for sleeping in the past.
Petra's eyes pleaded. They had the same look as Marie's when Marie had asked him to make this trip so Michael would be obliged to remain at home.
The inconvenience is too much.
The way Petra's fingers clutched his arm, Andrew began to suspect that there was more to it than reassurance about the smallness of the inconvenience. After breakfast, he went outside. Several young men huddled around a fire just beyond one of the limb-covered sheds. A couple of them moved to make room for him. A chunky young bachelor farmer, whose name he remembered as Dick Johnson, rubbed huge hands together briskly.
You don't look too good, Lewis. Was I you, I'd stay in that nice warm cabin as long as I had the chance. I do believe this was the coldest night we've had.
Where'd you sleep?
Johnson pointed his chin toward the shed.
Another night like this and we're liable to all freeze to death. Then old man Beard and the Fredonians can just walk in and take everything.
Andrew stared toward the several flimsy picket-style jacales various ones had built for shelter.
If three or four of us worked together, it wouldn't take long to build something like that.
A man named Pete Bradley frowned.
Man, live like a Mexican?
They're warmer than we are.
Well taken. How do we start?
I don't believe us Americans can build one. It takes a Mexican to rightly do that.
Andrew had visited in a number of these crude jacales around Bar. Their walls were of upright pickets, the lower ends of tightly fitted branches set into a shallow trench, the tops tied together, the roof a thick set of branches, topped by sod. The walls were mudded inside and out to turn the wind. There was even a mud fireplace, poor to look at, but functional. A tentative shelter at best, a jacal was nevertheless better than sleeping cold beneath an open-ended shed. Andrew found the exertion helped draw out the soreness and speed the healing process. The black and blue marks gradually faded from around his eyes, along with the swelling. He remembered that when anyone among the Lewis children had complained about the burden of labor and asked what they were going to receive for it, their father Mordecai would always say that work was its own reward because it heals the body and clears the mind, making a man wise. Andrew had always harbored reservations about the wisdom gained by working endless rows of corn, chopping out weeds with a hoe, but he had accepted the rest of the axiom. Carlos and Ramon gave advice and often pitched in to help with shovel or axe or mallet as the jacal began to take shape. Despite his dark predictions that the work would come to naught, Pete Bradley put his thin back into the project. A wiry man, in contrast to Dick Johnson's fleshy build, he seemed never to tire and never to stop worrying about failure. Somehow the pair, Johnson and Bradley, reminded Andrew of the two young bachelors Younce and Smith, who were courting Miles Nathan's daughter in the Colorado River settlement. Finnis and Luke Blackwood idly watched with a superior air.
Won't be nothing but a damned hovel. Fit for Mexicans, maybe, not for a white man.
He changed his mind when he saw it finished and found it snug and warm and dry inside.
Yeah, well, me and Luke could build a better one anyhow.
They tried. Finnis contributed mostly orders and ill temper, and Luke did the sweat labor. After they finished the structural work, they put too much heavy earth cover on top, against the advice of Carlos Moreno.
I ain't met no Mexican yet that could ever tell me anything worthwhile.
A hard rain added to the weight of all the water that soaked into the sod. About dusk, it brought the jacal crashing down upon a surprised Nelly, Finnis, and Luke. Hefty Nelly shook her clenched fists.
Dang you, Finnis! Dang you! your white trash family! I told you, you can't build nothing right!
God damn it, Luke, this is all your fault. You was the one to put up them side logs, and look how they done crashed down on us, you idiot!
Luke, having no one to whom to pass it on, picked awkwardly through the wreckage, trying to rescue his soaked blankets. Andrew thought it was probably the first time he had laughed since he left the farm on the Colorado for his ride to Nacogdoches. Petra was more inclined toward sympathy. She stood on the small porch watching the Blackwoods chase each other aimlessly through the rain.
It is a shame to laugh at the misfortunes of others.
Not when you know the Blackwoods.
Her frown turned unwillingly into a faint smile, and she hurried into the cabin. Her laugh was like music to Andrew. It reminded him of Marie's. Andrew's own laughter ended, and he began to feel hollow inside. It was a long way back to the Colorado River.